Colonel Douglas. How are you today?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it. And, of course, thanks for your service to our country as well.
Hey, thanks very much. I'm going to be honest with you. It's a privilege for me to do the interview with you. So, you know, really the thanks go to you for taking the time to do the interview.
Oh, well, it's the very least I can do. I'm very interested to learn more about the sacrifices of your Marines. Obviously, some incredible things have been accomplished. I was wondering if I could just start off with a few basic questions, if you don't mind. I just wanted
Absolutely.
To thank you. I just wanted to get your age and where you're from.
Gosh, man, that's kind of personal. No, I'm kidding. I'm 48 years old.
Okay.
And I am from, and I'm going to spell it because, you know, it might as well be the middle of nowhere if you're not familiar with, like, upstate New York. It is Ballston Spa, which is spelled B-A-L-L-S-T-O-N, next word spa, S-P-A, and that is in New York.
Great. How close is that to Buffalo? My wife is actually from Buffalo, New York.
It actually is probably about 6 hours east
far?
Of Buffalo. Yeah, because like if you picture like New York is kind of narrow in the Buffalo area, but it's long in the New York City to Canada area. So if you picture exactly where you are, you know, like if you had your hand and you put your finger where Buffalo is and you trace it east, that would be where Albany is. South of that, 2.5 hours would be New York City. North of that, 3 hours would be Canada. Well, we're about 20 minutes north of the capital, which is Albany. So it's, about 6 hours small from Buffalo.
Gotcha. Wow, I didn't realize it was that far. Well, great to be talking with you. Where are you now? I wasn't clear on exactly where you were going to be doing the interview from.
Right now I'm doing the interview from Camp Leatherneck at RC Southwest headquarters because we had done our liftoff. We actually departed FOB NOLE and our Afghan counterparts on the night of the 4th. And arrived here on the morning of the 5th.
Gotcha. Well, thanks again for everything you are doing and have been doing. I felt like a good place to start would be if you could, unfortunately, many Americans here at home are either not paying attention to the effort in Afghanistan or, sadly, some don't even realize the conflict is still ongoing. So I was wondering if you could, if we could start off by me asking, you know, what do you think is important for Americans to know about what has happened in northern, you know, northern Helmand and the area you just left where so many sacrifices have been made? Can you just kind of give me an overview of what you think has transpired so significantly over these past few months and years?
Yeah, actually, let me actually start off with, because I just had another interview where they actually didn't put it as tactfully as you did. And frankly, I admire the way that you put it about public support at home. The one thing I will say that has been actually rather inspiring is the amount of support that we've received from the American people here, you know, while we were at FOB NOLE. And what I mean by that is in the form of letters, care packages, the group letters from classrooms, from basically, you know, K through 12, you know, more so at the younger levels, but then the large care packages to the point that we had to, you know, ask individuals and groups to stop sending them. So, you know, while, you know, that, you know, maybe, the, you know, It's disappointing to hear, but what I can say is, at least at Fab Nolet, we definitely received an enormous amount of love and support from people back home, and many of which who, you know, have never laid eyes on us, couldn't pick any of us out of a lineup. But, you know, that was very inspiring. That said, to talk about what, you know, where the brigade is right now really has to go back a couple of years, because as you know, you're probably more knowledge about it than, you know, most. And, you know, there were a lot of Marines and coalition forces that executed operations, you know, obviously. And then we had the peak with the surge, and that kind of set the conditions for the introduction of Afghan National Security Forces, or ANSAF. And, you know, so then we saw the initial elements of police and ANA soldiers, and then began to see, you know, go from leading them to partnering with them to the point that, you know, advisors were kind of standing over the shoulder doing institutional advising. So what's been going on for the you know, that's the background. So what's been going on for the past 7 months is really we inherited the good fortune of the 2nd Brigade, who had a significant investment of time and energy and life of coalition forces that set the conditions for them to be successful and just require, you know, the institutional advising and really suggestions here and there as they move towards their own solution to problems or complex problems. So when we arrived, you know, the idea was that, you know, my vision that was that they need us right now, but there's going to come a point where they no longer need us, but they want us here. And so as we began our initial advising and discussion of, you know, the planning and preparation for operations, and they began to look towards the future, they had experienced already a couple of liftoffs, actually, because the 2nd Brigade is responsible for 4 district centers, one of which is Nowzad, another is Musakala, another is Kajaki, where the Kajaki Dam is located, and then, of course, the most notable is Sangin. So, you know, there was, you know, like, it's a tough area, you know, we've got to do this, we've always had Americans, you know, we need you, and, you know, like, yep, we're in agreement, we're on board, we're partners, and so, you know, but they were succeeding in these other 3 districts, and actually doing very well. And, you know, when I say well, I mean with working with the governance and, you know, all of the ANSAF partners working together and engaging the local leadership. So, you know, I knew it was only a matter of time with some of the institutional things that they needed to work on as far as, you know, the command and control and coordination issues and logistics. So the they spoke very fondly of all of the coalition forces that got them to the position that they were, as far as the, you know, the 5th Marines and 7th Marines and 6th Marines, and you know, would show us pictures of who, you know, who they had worked with previously and whatnot. We're very proud of it. It's like part of their history, and, you know, this brothers in arms as the warrior culture that they are. So, you know, as we progressed, then their first test, you know, or they had a couple of tests where they cleared Sangin, you know, right before we got there. They executed a clear, and we're still doing it as we arrived in Musakala, and then they began kind of preparations, you know, kind of some rest and refit period, and then started rolling into preparation for the elections. Now, what's important for that is that, as you know, the vision was they were initially had set up to do what they call OCOB 169, which was a clear of a small section to the south of the Sangin area to the south, actually, of Fob Noli and Fob Robinson to on 611. And so as the Corps commander and the brigade commanders, because it was a Corps level op, as they got together and began to discuss the problems and the what the future would look like, and the future for them was the elections, they discussed ultimately rapidly planned, coordinated an operation to clear to the north known as OCOB 144. So OCOB 169 never happened again, and so this is like real time, like they're there, all forces are on deck, ready to execute the next morning, and they're like, hey, guess what? Plans changed, we're going north, and things are going to be good. So they kick off the operation, and on you've got two brigade elements of two brigades, one being our brigade, another being the 3rd Brigade. So if you picture 611 drive as the line, the 2nd Brigade operating to the west of 611, the 3rd Brigade operating to the east, Afghan police working in coordination with both elements, they start the clear, and on day two, local leadership start coming to the, some of the local people start engaging some of the soldiers, which ultimately is then the brigade commander, about some of the some suspicious items that it appeared the brigade missed during the clear. And so they pointed them out, and it turned out they'd missed some IEDs. So now we've got coordination with the locals. So, of course, now the locals, as they see, they're gaining confidence in their Afghan National Security Forces. And in Jarrah, they start sharing information about the Taliban. And so in one area, as they continued this northern clear, they talked about how the Taliban had said, we're going to stay here and fight the brigade during this clear when it kicked off. And as the brigade got closer, the people said that, you know, the Taliban just picked up and fled and said, just don't work with them. And fled. So it gave a lot of credibility to the brigade, to the local governance, and ultimately to Jarrah. So they executed the clear. Long story made bearable for you. They find 178 IEDs in this. A couple weapons caches. Some storage areas, etc. So big win, and it begins the ability for the brigade commander, who has who balances your population-centric counterinsurgency or population-centric coin, engaging the locals, and then your enemy-centric coin, taking the fight to the enemy. So he's got the ability to balance both. But what he gains out of this operation is this enhanced communication with not just the local leadership, but with many of the the local power players. And so we see after this operation then continued offensive operations, as far as when they gain information about the Taliban, and then in addition to that, working with the locals with that isolating the Taliban from the local populace, to the point that they kind of even picked it up in preparation for the elections, and ultimately executed a across all the ANSAP partners, a stable election, looking at the numbers from 2009, where they only had 177 participants in Sangin, to, the most recent one, over 5,000. I know I've talked a bit, and I think I answered, gave you the kind of what's been going on. Now I'll say what do you need amplified, or what have I missed?
Yeah, well, I appreciate you taking me through it. It really helps me understand a bit more about what's been happening there, and all the accomplishments of your men and the Afghans as well. I've spoken with several young men who've served in Sangin. One was a Marine who repeatedly exposed himself to fire, enemy fire, and was wounded. He was at Walter Reed when I spoke to him, and I just wanted to ask you, as you've led these Marines, for a few examples, perhaps of some things that you've seen your Marines do that really have inspired you, as you been serving in Afghanistan?
Well, you know, I mean, I'll tell you, one of the biggest inspirations has been looking at how quickly they developed rapport with the, because, you know, everything with the, that we've dealt with deals with trust and friendship and rapport building. So, you know, the, you know, there's that warrior ethos on both sides, you know, as far as the Afghan side and on the U.S. side, you know, it's a culture. And so the fact that the Marines were able to come in so rapidly and establish rapport with their counterparts and work closely and on a day-to-day basis and, you know, in this shared sacrifice, you know, Spartan conditions under, with some adversity, but, you know, frankly, it was inspiring. And so, you know, you look at the sacrifice, obviously, with, the Marine and some of the members that you're talking about, and frankly, they, you know, their sacrifice is what made our job, you know, really, it was in comparison, not that difficult, you know, to theirs, because they set such a strong foundation for the area, and they, you know, and it's like, you know, it's one of those things where you're like, only history can tell, or, you know, the hindsight is 20/20. You know, at the time, it's like, you know, for, you know, specifically for the Marine who was wounded, it's like, did I make a difference? You know, as he's home, you know, as he's in Walter Reed. And so at the time, as he's, you know, maybe wondering that, I'm going to tell him, yeah, he did. Because you look at, you know, if you think of warfare, in as far as, you know, in the three components of physical, mental and moral, and the physical is very tangible, right? It's easy to measure, you know, as far as equipment supplies and things like that. You know, the mental, as far as the intellectual part of the battlefield, easy as well, you know, to grasp the battlefield situations that, you know, that Marines have, that you've spoken with, you know, have you know, seen a situation, rapidly processed it, and taken action. But the intangible, you know, as identified even by Napoleon with, you know, as far as the morale, you know, the moral or the morale component, you know, as he says, you know, the moral is to the physical is 3:1. Well, you know, it's just that intangible. And so the intangible being, and this is, you know, this ties to your question about, you know, what was inspiring. You know, it's that intangible factor that, you know, we just can't really put a number value on. And so that, you know, I look at what the Marines before us did, and so that as the brigade staff and even the soldiers are showing us pictures of Marines that they served with, or are showing us the logo of, 3-5 or of 3-7, you know, or even, you know, any of the elements of, six Marines that had been in the area. And again, shown pictures or shown, a rank insignia that was given to them by a Lance Corporal. And so you have that morale component that, is frankly unstoppable. And, you know, so that's, you know, that, you know, the inspiration of, you know, of the warrior that, you know, the establishment of rapport, they shared things with us of previous units that had we not established that rapport, had my Marines more specifically not established that rapport, they wouldn't have shared it with us. And as I said, it's that intangible that you look at and you say, you know, you can't put a price on it. And that's the thing that is, we know they've got adversity ahead. I mean, they're going to be tested, but, you know, that, you know, given the fact that they have that, a high component in the realm of the morale component, I believe they're going to be successful.
Thanks for that. And actually, that was you kind of led straight into my next question, which is, you know, after sacrificing so much and working so hard to to establish that rapport and leave this area to the Afghans in a better place than when the Marines arrived, which it sounds like, you know, clearly is the case. You know, it's still got to be difficult to just kind of leave it in the hands of others, but it sounds to me like you're pretty confident in the Afghans and, you know, the training that you were able to give them and that their morale is pretty high. Can you just talk a little bit more about how you feel about the Afghans who are going to be taking charge of that area?
Well, you know, it's important to point out that they actually took charge of it back in June of 2013. So they still, you know, they still had an element being, you know, at one point of from 3-7, and then you know, just most recently with us, they had Charlie 1-7 that was up in Sabi Kanam, and we were down in Nole, but. So, you know, with that, you know, frankly, coalition forces weren't doing anything up in that area. It was, you know, it was all the planning and coordinating and executing of day-to-day operations were being done by ANSAF. And so, you know, we saw an enhanced effectiveness and efficiency of coordination and communication with the other ANSAF partners, specifically the police and the district centers. And we saw an enhanced effectiveness and efficiency of command and control of the higher headquarters down to the separate, you know, they call them CANDACs, and, you know, we would call it a battalion, and the battalions down to the Tolais, which would be companies, and then the Baluks, which would be known as platoons. So, you know, we saw this, you know, again, this enhanced working relationship, and, you know, frankly, just their tenacity and ability to rapidly look at a problem and then find a solution and then go forth in a direction and achieve a successful result was humbling, you know, to say, you know, we're here as part of that. So, I might have strayed a little bit from your question. So if you could ask it again, if I'm missing components of it, I think I can add more to it.
No, I think that's great. You know, I just, it sounded to me like you're very confident in the Afghans.
Yes.
and I think you just reinforced that. If there's anything else you'd like to add, please, by all means.
Yeah, I can. And so to sum up what I was saying about that, I'm very confident in them. I will say I believe in the 2nd Brigade, and I believe that, you know, their enhanced effectiveness and efficiency, you know, across the, you know, with subordinate and adjacent and higher units is going to enable them to succeed. As I mentioned, you know, when we look at the tangibles, the physical and the mental components of war, you know, again, that intangible is something that is going to, that is good. The moral component or morale component is really what we're going to see is going to continue to enable their success. And so, you know, as you asked, you know, and is there anything to close? Yeah, I mean, you know, one, thanks to the American people for those that, you know, gave us the love and support that we did. You know, I mean, and I'm not just saying families. I mean, you know, I couldn't do what I do without my family. And, you know, but it went beyond my family and the families of the team. It went on to, you know, as I mentioned, people that you know, that know none of us, that don't know people that know us, that, you know, frankly, weren't looking for anything other than to say, you know, we care about you and we care about what you're doing. And so, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't send a thank you to them. You know, the next, I'd like to say thank you to everybody that served in this area, because, you know, right now we're having the good fortune of seeing the success of the brigade right now, you know, as far as carrying itself through the fighting season, and then into what, you know, would be termed ordinarily the winter season, which was a continued fighting season, seeing them execute the election successfully, them leading us out of Sangin, and yes, they did. They, you know, they led the forces from Sangin down to Camp Leatherneck. So as we see that, you know, that's where the thank you comes in, because quite frankly, you know, as you know, initially coalition forces came into the area and then more forces were surged in. And, you know, when we look at, you know, what was the mission? Hey, you know, stop the Taliban and remove safe havens for Al-Qaeda. Yep, that was done. And then as we rapidly introduce ANSAF into the area and the, you know, as I mentioned, you know, between the all the different battalions and the MARSOC units and all the other coalition forces that poured so much into it in energy or poured, invested, frankly, invested time, life, and energy into it. You know, we're the guys that were able to, you know, come to the final event and be there and see the success of the brigade and provide, you know, minimal corrections, but, you know, right, you know, we're getting the handshakes and the hugs that are saying, hey, great job. Well, I got to say, you know, there's a long list of people that really made the you know, that liftoff possible, and those are the unsung heroes. You know, the guy like you mentioned that you know, they're the ones that deserve the thanks, because we couldn't have succeeded in our mission without them. And so in closing, I'd like to say, you know, thanks to those that made this possible.
Well, thank you, Colonel, and thanks to all of your Marines for the incredible work that you've done. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you and an honor. When do you hope to get home to your family?
We're looking at sometime within the next week to 2 weeks, we'll be departing here from RC Southwest and returning to our base station. We'll be able to be reunited with families. So looking forward to it. But, you know, that said, I mean, you know, ready, willing, and able to, you know, believe in the mission. My family believes in the mission, and ready, willing, and able to, you know, to stay and execute whatever is directed or desired. Because it's been a humbling experience, and frankly, it's been my privilege to serve here.
Well, again, thank you, and I'm glad that you'll all be back with your family soon. And in the meantime, please stay safe out there. And again, thank you so much for everything you've done and for taking the time today.
Oh, please, honestly, don't thank me. I appreciate you taking the time to ask about what we were doing and then to have an interest in it. Really means a lot.
Least I can do. Thank you, Colonel, and take care, okay?
All right, thank you. Take care.
Okay, thanks again. Bye.
All right, bye.